Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI gives thanks to God for the fruit of the earth and calls agriculture an indispensable resource for the future. And an upcoming conference in Senegal shines the light on the female face of migration. Pope Benedict XVI says the time has come to relaunch agriculture and place the sector back in its rightful place in the global economy. The Pope on Sunday reflected on the situation of modern agriculture today and on the many issues raised by the just-ended G20 summit before praying the midday Angelus together with those gathered in St. Peter's Square. Lydia O'Kane reports.
Looking out on a St. Peter's Square where construction has already begun on this year's nativity scene, Pope Benedict, before reciting the Angelus, took the opportunity to discuss the current economic crisis. On this Sunday of Thanksgiving in Italy, the Pope said, this current crisis recently discussed by the G20 leaders was but another aspect of serious problems such as the continuing imbalance between wealth and poverty, the scandal of hunger, environmental emergencies now also widespread, and the problem of unemployment.
La crisi economica in atto di cui si è trattato anche in questi giorni nella riunione del cosiddetto G20.
The Pope added that at times the process of industrialization has overshadowed the agricultural sector and called for a reassessment of this valuable sector, not in a nostalgic sense, he said, but as an indispensable resource for the future. Continuing on this theme, the Holy Father stressed that a concerted effort must be made to pursue a new balance between agriculture, industry and services so that development is sustainable. Key to this, he said, was the nurturing and spreading of a clear ethical awareness capable of meeting the most complex challenges of our time. After reciting the Angelus prayer, Pope Benedict made a call for peace in Iraq and appealed to the international community to generously support the people of Haiti, who, he said, because of the terrible earthquake in January, are now suffering from a serious outbreak of cholera.
In questo momento, desidero rinnovare la mia vicinanza alle care popolazioni di Haiti, che a causa del terribile terremoto del gennaio scorso soffrono ora per una grave epidemia di colera.
The Pope concluded by saying that next Saturday, the 27th of November in St. Peter's Basilica, he would preside at Vespers for the first Sunday of Advent and a prayer vigil for the unborn.
Sabato 27 novembre prossimo, nella Basilica di San Pietro, presiderò i primi vespri della prima domenica di Avvento e una veglia di preghiera per la vita nascente.
The Holy Father added that this initiative is shared with particular churches throughout the world, and he recommended it also be held in parishes, religious communities, associations and movements. Finally, the Pope said, the period of preparation for Christmas is a good time to invoke divine protection upon every human being called into existence, and also as a thanksgiving to God for the gift of life received from our parents. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. It's no more than what each and every one of us wants for ourselves, our family and our children. A safe life, a healthy diet, sanitation and medical care, an education, a job. Yes, those are the reasons millions of migrant women leave their homes in search of what for many of them is just a dream every year. Some are driven by poverty or natural disasters, or a lack of opportunities and a need for work. Others are fleeing persecution or conflict. Many leave their families, their children behind, and take terrible risks both during their journey and upon arrival where often they are exploited and abused. Reading a press release and other informative material, I discovered that half of all those who migrate are women. I also discovered that Caritas Internationalis, the Catholic aid organisation with one of the largest networks dedicated to reducing poverty and injustice throughout the world, is busy organising a conference dedicated to the female face of migration. I spoke to one of the women who is responsible for the three-day conference, which will take place in Senegal from November the 30th. She is someone with a deep knowledge and experience, both regarding the issue itself and regarding the relevant policy areas that take the needs of women into account.
I'm Martina Liebsch. I'm the policy director of Caritas Internationalis. I'm responsible for the issues of migration, specifically migration and women, but also climate change, food security, and the questions of equality between men and women.
It's all rather connected, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. There is quite a connection, certainly, between equality issues and the migration issue. There is a connection between climate change and migration because it's expected that climate change will give rise to further migration in the future. And let's say the overarching theme is poverty and hunger in the world. So that's why we are also taking up the issue of food security, because we think that this is probably the basis also to, for example, avoid that people migrate by force, which can either be due to conflicts or as well due to poverty in their own country.
Or also simply because they want a better life for their families and for themselves, which is absolutely respectable, I think.
Definitely. And in fact, the international conventions say that there is a right to migrate, to leave its own country. There is no right to enter a foreign country. But it's, as you say, a respectable choice, which is understandable. And sometimes if we put ourselves in the shoes of some people who say, well, the conditions in our place are possibly not as good as somewhere else, so I would like to go there. The problem, though, is that a lot of, let's say, these dreams are also fueled by myths. So there is this myth that in Europe, in North America, everything is better, everything is nicer, everything is more colorful. But the reality for many of the migrants is that indeed this is not the case once they arrive there due to many reasons.
When one thinks of women migrants, it's such a wide range of realities. We think of the women who come from Africa, who undertake really dangerous journeys, who risk their lives, who end up being exploited. But here, for example, in Italy, we are also surrounded by many, many women migrants from places like the Philippines who have come to build a very important part in society here in Italy, and they are, as you pointed out, domestic workers. They've become fundamental to our lives. And maybe we don't see their predicament as so dramatic, but they too, I think, find themselves in situations which are very challenging and maybe difficult and are often submitted to exploitation.
Yeah, well, I think among the migratory flows of women, the biggest part of these migratory flows goes into the service sector, which is, I think, in many parts of the world, to work in the domestic care or in the domestic environment. The problem with that is that in many countries, as far as we know, there are only 19 countries in the world who have regulated domestic work. There are no regulations. The work as such is not recognized as a real remunerated work. So people are very often subject to, let's say, so-called, in the best cases, of low wages, not very good conditions, and in the worst of the cases, to exploitation. And then it depends a little bit on how this flow is organized. So in some countries you have recruitment agencies, but these recruitment agencies are not really controlled. So they can give a person a certain contract to leave its country, to go to another country, but as soon as the woman arrives in the foreign country, suddenly the contract is changed. She learns that her contract is tied to one employer only, which means if she suffers exploitation and wants to leave, she is practically without protection.
Now, don't ask me why I chose to go into that interview so gently, choosing to focus on the migrant women I am so familiar with, the ones who look after my little boy and cook for him whilst I'm at work, rather than on those who live more or less underground, working for hardly any money in unhealthy environments, or on the ones in the streets or hidden away in apartments, helpless victims of human traffickers with no scruples. Yes, there are so many different stories and perspectives to take into account, so many different realities that Martina and the others behind the Caritas conference are making sure do not fall by the wayside.
I saw glancing at your programme here that you have chosen to highlight the stories of some women. Is there any particular story you could give us a preview of that you find particularly significant?
Well, I think there are two stories. One is, again, a more personal story. So I grew up in South America, and when we left there, we took a nanny with us, which was part of our family, for a long time while living abroad. And I think she became really a family member. And she was always dreaming of going back to her country, because then after she lived with us, she lived with other people. And the moment she could do it, she died. So I think part of this work is also to think about her. And the second, well, stories about migrant women, there are many. Unfortunately, there are many very sad ones. Yeah, I think one, for example, is this story of a lady in Jordan who has come to Jordan, who was recruited in principle into Jordan as a secretary and then learned that her permit is a domestic worker's permit. But then for some administrative reasons, she became irregular. And now she is in Jordan. She has to hide from the police, because every day you stay as an irregular migrant, you have to pay a fine. Her family is back home. She got sick. And the only thing she's longing for is to see her two children again. But it seems like at the moment there is no solution for that. So I think this is a very, well, I think a dramatic story, but it also kind of implies all the elements of the migration story. So you can migrate as a regular migrant, but it can happen to you that even if you do so, once you reach the country of so-called destination, you can still become an irregular migrant. Depending on the context and the structure, you can become seriously ill. You can be without protection, and that is why, for example, some international conventions ask for basic health care for irregular migrants, and I think that's very important. And finally, this dimension of having left the family behind, specifically the children, which has a whole, let's say, implications in terms of, am I a good mother? Are my children well? Am I doing the right thing? What's with the rest of my family? So there are a lot of implications around that. So I think that's kind of, an example, but there are many, many more stories.
I know that many women are lured into accepting contracts or prospects of better work and end up in trafficking rings as well. Is this one of the themes you're going to touch on too?
Yeah, certainly. I think that's part of the reality, and we will do so as well, because we have a project within Caritas, which is a network called Christian Organizations Against Trafficking, where we have 32, mainly Catholic, but also some Protestant organizations being part of this network, and we try to exchange practices and do advocacy for the rights of trafficked persons. It's still a big reality, and again, unfortunately, it mainly touches women and children, although in the past years we can see that there is a growing awareness as well of men being trafficked. So you have the whole situation of men being trafficked into situations of labor exploitation, little boys in Pakistan being trafficked to become camel jockeys. So there is this reality as well, which in spite of focusing on women, which we should not really forget, So that will be certainly a topic at the conference. And I think the whole issue about trafficking has, I would say, reached somehow its peak on the political agenda a few years ago, producing a lot of documents, a lot of material, a lot of action plans. What I'm still missing is the implementation of these action plans, but also this approach that persons who have been trafficked are not only protected if they cooperate with the police, but that they, as victims of a crime, get protection, get time for rehabilitation, and then the option to decide whether they want to testify or not. So that's one of the key demands we have.
It must be so frightening for these people. It must give such a sense of isolation to find oneself in a situation like that.
Definitely that is the case. And I think also because many people who look at it from outside say, well, I mean, these women knew that they would take a risk, that something might go wrong. But I think nobody can really imagine in which situation these women can end up. I remember looking at a video from a reporter from the New York Times who is also engaged in this whole issue about violence against women, where you could see that these women, for example, working in prostitution, were taking away their documents, so they were in principle no person or no legal person. They were hidden in a cellar, so the only moment they could come to the surface was when they were working, so to speak. And so these people are kept really in isolation, and it's a very traumatizing experience. So what we are trying to do as well is to bring these issues to the surface. And I want to highlight it's not only about being trafficked into prostitution, but also into exploitative situations in work, so domestic workers. There's a lot of connection there. But as well to create a network where we can refer to each other and say, for example, women, Sri Lankan women in Lebanon, they can, or through Caritas in Lebanon, they can get back in touch with their families in Sri Lanka, because there is a strong link between Caritas Lebanon and Caritas Sri Lanka.
What would you say the end of this conference is? Or do you foresee other events to follow up on it?
Well, there will be certainly a follow-up. I think it's within Caritas probably the first global migration conference. So there have been migration conferences in different regions, but it's probably the first global one. I think the end of this conference is, on one hand, that people go home with a better sense of what is happening around the world. Secondly, maybe also strengthened because they know that in their fight they are not alone, but they are part of a bigger network, that they can possibly make links between also different continents to say, well, how can we reinforce each other, which is part of our work here in the Secretariat. It's to be inspired by practices which exist, to say, well, that's something we might consider to do as well. And finally, and that's definitely the part which will need a follow-up, is to come up with a policy document with some recommendations, both within Caritas and for governments and UN bodies.
That's what I wanted to ask. These policy documents, do they reach government tables? Do you actually see action taken by those who can change the laws?
Yeah, there are examples for that. I think the biggest problem probably for those who work on the ground is you have to be very patient. I started to work in the migration area something like 20 years ago, and I remember that we were discussing at that time, well, why doesn't a certain country have an integration plan? And that's my own country in Germany. Now this plan exists, but we started to discuss that 20 years ago, so you have to really be patient.
On the other hand, Martina says it's her experience that by joining forces, sharing recommendations, building a coordinated network, and speaking with one voice, you really can influence the UN, and specifically the International Labour Organization.
The decisions taken there are taken by governments, so that's let's say, a kind of indirect way to influence governmental policies. What we are expecting is that by next year, the International Labour Organization might adopt a convention on decent work for domestic workers.
That's a good name.
Yeah, exactly. And this includes migrant domestic workers, because the majority of domestic workers, so ILO estimates that there are about 100 million domestic workers all over the world, and the majority of them are migrant domestic workers. So it's clear, at least for us, but I think also the draft convention of the ILO shows that the issues around migrant domestic workers are taken into account. I mean, the moment of the truth will come when this convention is adopted and how much will stay in it. It's planned for next year. We will see how it goes. But I think some people say, okay, this is a UN document, so not everyone has to sign it. But it sets certain standards, and I think it sets also an international discourse about, for example, this group of migrants, which can have influences on other.
As you say, you need patience, you look to the future, but every day these people live with us. Mm-hmm. Some are on the streets, some are in our homes, some are looking after our children. Do you think that, I speak for Italy because I live in Italy, do you think that we can change the way many of these women are perceived, many with prejudice, I think, or take them for granted?
Well, of course, that's on one hand an individual attitude which you can at least try to acquire through getting interested in the topic, maybe work as a volunteer, maybe visit centers which, for example, Caritas in Rome has, and people working there very competently. That's one thing. On the other hand, I think governments really have a big, big responsibility, because if you look at electoral campaigns, you always see that this migration issue is used in a very manipulative way, and it's not only Italy, it's in other countries as well. And I think if we want to change the perspective or the perception, then I think governments have a responsibility to talk in a responsible way about migration. And it doesn't mean, and that's what people tell us all the time, that you just have to say everything is nice and fine. No, but I mean, you can say we have this reality. For example, these people are working here. What is very many times not even said, it looks from the outside or from populistic discourse, it looks as if the whole world is here and just living on our expenses, which is not at all true. So I think you can say, yes, we have people here, people are working, they are sometimes, depending on their status, paying taxes, contributing to our societies as well. And I think that would already change the perspective.
They're not taking anything away from us, are they?
Well, there are studies which say that what migrants overall, I mean, I'm not talking about a specific countries, the contributions they do to societies are much higher than what the society themselves pays to them.
And not only do they work, pay taxes and contribute to the country's economy, Martina points out, you just have to look properly to notice how many successful migrants have created enterprises, have created jobs. And another thing not to be ignored, she says, is that so many Europeans in the past have migrated elsewhere in search of exile, protection, better opportunities.
And we tend to forget that. So why are we so afraid of people coming here? And moreover, we have to say that from a European perspective, it looks as everyone is coming here. But in fact, many of the flows happen somewhere else and much stronger than in Europe. So I think there is a whole range of discourse which needs to be changed. And as I said, it's not about denying that there might be problems in living together. There might be problems in how to organize this. At the end of the day, it's to say migrants are human beings as everyone else. You have good ones, you have bad ones. So it's, from a biblical point of view, what I like very much is this phrase in the Leviticus which says you have to treat the foreigner in your country as a fellow countryman or, yeah, countrywoman. I think one thing which I would like to highlight as well is that from our perspective in our work as Caritas, but also from a governmental perspective, it would really be necessary and helpful if we would look more at this issue around what's the impact of migration on men and women. So where are the differences? What do we need to change? What do we need to do better in order for women migration to become a safe option and not an exploitative option? Because I think what we also say as well, because some people say, well, why don't these migrants just stay home and why don't you convince them to stay home? We say, well, there are so many reasons why people migrate, and we call this age the age of mobility, so why do we exclude a certain group from moving? But the important thing is that this can happen in a legal, in a safe and in an organized manner. So I think that would be something where I guess there would be more work which needs to be done. And from my experience, even within Caritas, we have many initiatives where people look at female issues. But again, the topic is equality between men and women. So look both at the impact. What's the difference between the situation for men migrating, for women migrating, and link to that the whole impact on families, for example.
That was Martina Libic, Policy Director at Caritas Internationalis. That's all from the English feature program today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.